welcome everyone to another episode of the Dying Sports Podcast on the Dying Sports Podcast Network. We're recording this on Thursday, July 15th in the morning, fresh off getting double vaccinated myself last night. So right now I'm just in the midst of trying to figure out, okay, am I going to be hit by an 18-wheeler soon here and start getting all those symptoms that we've heard horror stories about? And, you know, or am I going to be one of the lucky ones and not feel anything? So we'll see how sleepy I get as this episode goes on there. But right now, feeling good. So far, so good. Feeling a little bit tired. Not sure if that's from the second vaccine or just being a parent and chasing two little kids around all day. So not sure where the energy's gone, but so far, so good compared to some of the stories I've heard from other people as far as how the second dose affected them. I'm doing pretty good so far. So knock on wood that that keeps up. Got a great episode for you today. We're going to talk off the top just a little bit, Suns Bucks, but then we're also going to bring on our friend Brendan Detzler from the Future Sickos podcast. And they are an Ottawa Senators podcast here. They just interviewed Pierre Dorion, Senators GM. And we're going to deep dive into all things Ottawa, Senators, hockey, what to expect in this off season and new season coming up in the fall, because as they just announced, back to 82 games, back to regular divisions. So the 1 year Canadian division is done. It was a fun little experiment. I liked it at first, but it kind of got a little bit boring towards the end of, okay, great, we're playing Winnipeg for the seventh time now. Like, I thought there would be a little bit more animosity between the teams once they got to the sixth, seventh, eighth time they were meeting each other, but didn't really play out that way. And whether that's just because, hey, no fans, so there's not a lot of atmosphere in the buildings to begin with, or hey, there's a global pandemic going on, so their minds are on a few other things other than hockey at the moment. For whatever reason, that expected spark that a lot of pundits thought would be there at the beginning of the season when the divisions were first announced didn't really materialize. So I'm all right with not seeing the All-Canadian division back again. Going to get to see some of the teams that we haven't seen in what feels like a year and a half at this point, because Ottawa obviously didn't get the luxury of having the bubble last time around. And then this year, only played Canadian teams, didn't have any of the American exposure there too. So be nice to see some of our friends south of the border for a change. Before we get to Brendan and all things Ottawa hockey, though, wanted to talk about Suns Bucks NBA Finals. So game four just went down last night. 109-103 victory for Milwaukee. Series tied 2-2. I think the best part of all of this is that finally the Suns and four guy can step out of the spotlight here. It's not going to be a Phoenix sweep. That guy certainly, to his credit, milked his 15 minutes of fame and extended it into probably an hour and a half there. How he was getting dapped up by every NBA star and free tickets and interview here, interview there, essentially for just brawling in the stands, I have no idea. But I fear for our future if that's the kind of things that we're going to be rewarding. But anyways, moving on from that, I mean, Giannis had a fairly pedestrian, by his standards at least, 26 points, 14 rebounds last night, and just goes to show you the high standards we're holding him to at this point, because that's a pretty good stat line on any given night, but based on what he had been doing the last couple of games there, definitely wasn't his A performance, and looked like the Suns threw a couple different looks at him and slowed him down a little bit, but I think we can, at this point, sort of put any concerns about how healthy is Giannis behind us. Maybe he's not 100%, but I think he's operating at least 90%. Like, he's not severely compromised out there, which was a pretty genuine concern for a lot of Bucks fans when he hyperextended that knee and, you know, had that awkward landing. And so I think a lot of concerns around that have certainly been squashed. He's definitely been bringing it the last few games, but he certainly wasn't the story last night. The story was Chris Middleton exploding for 40 points, 6 rebounds, 4 assists. And this is what Bucks fans have been wanting for so long now. So many playoff series have come down to the fact that the Bucks will only go as far as Giannis can carry them. And for any of those role players, whether it was, you know, a Brooke Lopez, whether it was a Middleton, whether it was a Holiday, like, fans were just waiting for one of them to have that breakout moment, or that Middleton game, or that Lopez game, or whatever the case might be. And last night we got the Chris Middleton experience, and it was nice to see him finally step up on the biggest stage, NBA Finals, all eyeballs on them. I mean, if they lose that game, history will show you that down 3-1, it's not great unless you got LeBron and the Cavs coming here to try and climb all the way back. It is not pretty being down 3-1, especially going back to Phoenix too. So pivotal game last night, and a game that they actually trailed by 9 points in the fourth quarter at 1.2. And you know, you look at Milwaukee, and they historically have not been a team that does well trying to rally back from a deficit. They're a team that likes to run out to a lead and just play bully ball and maintain that lead and beat you up down low. They're not a team that can score buckets in a matter of 30 seconds. They don't have that microwave player that it's a plug and play and all of a sudden he's splashing threes and, oh, he just put up 12 points in like 3 minutes there. That player doesn't exist on Milwaukee. So it's really reassuring if you're a Milwaukee Bucks fan to see not only did they win, not only is the series tied 2-2, obviously heading back to Phoenix, but the manner in which they did it. It didn't have to be Giannis putting on his Superman cape and dropping 50 points or something like that to get them over the hump. It was a secondary player. It was some of the other role players stepping up defensively as well too, because I mean, 109-103, look at some of the Bucks regular season games, like they were almost track meets. So to see them clamp down defensively, looks like Holiday is finally starting to round back into prime defending form there, because for a little bit in those first two games, he was getting cooked out there. So he's obviously figured something out on the defensive end, and he's looking more like his former self. And that's got to be reassuring if you are a fan of Bucks Nation. I mean, Booker, huge response after game three, where he essentially got benched down the stretch. And, you know, whether he was moping on the sidelines or, you know, it was just a teaching moment from the coaching staff or whatever the case was, no concerns from him in game four, 42 points on the night. Unfortunately for the Suns, he was really the only one of them who showed up. I mean, you look at Chris Paul, struggled, 10 points, 7 assists, minus 10 on the night. Ayton was virtually non-existent other than to rebound. Like, he was putting up DeAndre Jordan-esque numbers there, 6 points, 17 rebounds, minus 7 on the night. And that's not something that we've seen a lot of out of him at any point in this playoff series. He's been a regular double-double guy. Pencil him in for like 20 and 15 most nights there. So to see him only put up 6, you know, obviously the Bucks have figured out something with this Suns team. And I think what it's really come down to is they've just simplified things. They're not trying to be cute. They've realized that outside of Ayton, who is going to stop Lopez or Giannis down low? Is it going to be Frank Kaminsky? I don't think so, right? Is it going to be Jay Crowder? Well, maybe they might be able to slow them down a little bit, but are they going to be able to completely negate them? No. And you saw that even in game three, that when Ayton went out with foul trouble there, Crowder hopping onto Giannis did a serviceable job, but by no means would anyone be writing home or putting the headline, Crowder shuts down Giannis, the next day in the newspapers. So it was a glaring weakness that anyone at home could see, but for whatever reason, the Bucks were reluctant to exploit in games 1 and 2. Go home, get some home cooking, home atmosphere, whatever it was clearly the turning point here. And I mean, you see it all the time in basketball, especially, that home court seems to come NBA finals time be such a pivotal thing, because in a lot of other sports, whether it's baseball or hockey or whatever, you know, you go down 2-0, it's usually 4 or 5 game series. It's almost always that way, where it doesn't really matter what's going on, where those games are getting played. You get in that 2-game hole, it is very tough to climb out of. But we see it time and time again in the NBA, where a team goes down 2-0, no worries, go home, win the next two, you know, it's all of a sudden best 2 out of 3 for the next one. So it's reassuring for Bucks fans, a little bit concerning for Suns fans that, you know, is this a matter of Milwaukee has finally figured out or seen something in the Suns' defensive rotations that they're exploiting and they're going to continue building on it? Or was this just a matter of, hey, they went home and they took care of business? But I mean, Chris Paul afterwards saying, you know, you can't bank on having home court to win the game. You actually have to go out there and play it. And it's true, right? Like, really looks like Milwaukee figured something out with the Suns. Now it's up to the Suns to respond and throw a new wrinkle at them. We saw it in game three, the kind of, when they went to the zone defense, I think when Ayton went out for a little bit, and it really threw Milwaukee off of their offensive rhythm. And all of a sudden that lead got cut down to like 4 points, I think it was. And they clawed their way back into it. But then again, they adjusted and we saw that lead balloon up to like 20 points when Chris Paul went out of the game. So it's definitely going to be a matter of that Suns coaching staff hopping in the video room and really watching some tape on the flights back to Phoenix and figuring out, all right, what are some different looks we can throw at these guys? Because the one knock on Coach Bud, and trust me, he's certainly deserved it based on his past playoff performances, is he's not great at in-game adjustments, right? Game to game, he'll figure it out. In-game, if you're throwing multiple weird looks at him and different defenses and you're, you know, blitzing the ball carrier, you're switching to a zone every now and then, right? Like, he's not going to be compared to Phil Jackson or Greg Popovich at any point here. You know, most Milwaukee Bucks fans have clamored for him to get fired at some point, but lo and behold, here he is, you know, two wins away from an NBA title. But in-game adjustments are not his forte, and the Suns really need to try and exploit that heading back home. And, you know, I think he can chalk it up to a couple of things. I think number one, Coach Bud has improved, we'll say, on his in-game adjustments there, right? Like we just talked about the switching to zone. He saw the lead shrink and they made some adjustments and just started playing volleyball and watched the lead grow again. But if you're the Suns, you're going to want to throw more than one or two wrinkles at them. You're going to want to throw all sorts of different looks. Keep them off of rhythm. Keep them guessing what you're going to do next. Don't let them settle down and figure out, okay, here's how we exploit this, because you don't have the personnel to match up against that size. And if they're able to use that size to their advantage, you're in a world of trouble. So if you're the Bucks, I mean, you've got to keep your foot on the gas. You cannot go down there into Phoenix and think, all right, we tied it up, mission accomplished here, let's see where the chips fall. Like, you've got to look at game five as a must win. You win there, go home, close it out, take care of business, have that killer mentality. I think that's something that the Bucks have really been lacking in past years, but have maybe figured out, at least Giannis appears to have figured it out this year. I mean, you can see it in his demeanor. He's throwing stuff on the sidelines. He's calling for the ball. He wants the sets to run through him. If he's got a mismatch, he's waving his arms around and wanting that ball and getting pissed off when he doesn't get that ball. And that's something we haven't seen a lot of out of him in his career, right? He's been a fairly passive superstar. He'll get his points, he'll get his boards, but he's not going to go out there and, you know, throw a tantrum or get emotional or anything like that. And I'm not saying to lose your head, but to see him actually give a you-know-what and it coming out emotionally on the court, that's got to be reassuring, not only to fans, but to his teammates as well, too. Because not that anyone's ever questioning his drive or his will to win. Everyone wants to win. You don't get to the NBA level without having that inner fire or that drive to win. But there's a difference between, you know, you and a bunch of your buddies playing pickup basketball and you wanting to win out there versus you're surrounded by the absolute most alpha males, best basketball players on the planet. There's a different degree of wanting to win at that level that most of us can't even fathom. So to see him try and tap into that a little bit, I like that a lot. So anyways, game five, going to be interesting. Heading back to Phoenix Saturday, 9 p.m. Eastern time. Who knows which way it's going to go? I'm liking the way that the Bucks are looking lately, though. If you had to ask me what the outcome would have been after those first two games in Phoenix, I would have probably been very similar to Suns in four guy there and thinking that it was probably a 4 or 5 game series. Maybe Milwaukee wins one at home and then Phoenix comes home and closes that thing out. Chris Paul finally gets his long overdue ring and they ride off into the sunset there. But I think they, unless the Phoenix Suns can show us some sort of a different look on Saturday night, that Milwaukee has tapped into something here and they could be riding this to not only the series win, but also back-to-back wins there and just making it 4 straight and closing it out in 6. So Saturday night, we will find out one way or another. That's enough NBA talk to kick us off there. So we got the basketball out of our system. We're going to be switching over to NHL talk now. So we are going to be talking with Brendan Detzler from the Future Sickos podcast about all things Ottawa Senators and the busy offseason they've got coming up next. All right, before we get to our interview with Brennan from the Future Sickos podcast, want to talk to you guys about our other friends over at MyBookie. Head over to mybookie.ag, or better yet, double dip and head over to dinespressbox.com and use any of our links over to MyBookie's website. They'll pre-populate all of the codes that you need for references and first deposit bonuses and all of that good stuff. But if you do head over to their website and are perusing and want to sign up or make a deposit, make sure you use the promo code DineSports, DineSSports, no spaces in between. That way they know who is sending you. They've got some of the friendliest lines on the internet, and quick payout, simple checkout procedures, first deposit bonuses, and more. What more could you want from an online gambling website? Tonight for our parlay, it is slim pickings in the world of sports. Not much going on in NBA, MLB, NHL's wrapped up. A lot of the leagues inactive tonight. So we're kind of scraping the bottom of the barrel here as far as what we can even put our money on. But we do have Red Sox, Yankees in New York. Always a good time when you've got Boston taking on New York. So we are going to go ahead and take the Red Sox money line and parlay that with the Gold Cup Soccer, Canada taking on Haiti tonight. We are going to take Team Canada to walk away with the victory. We want no loss, no draw, no nothing, just a straight win from them. Make sure, though, when you are gambling, please gamble responsibly. Must be 18 or older. Trouble gambling? Please check out all the resources online on the MyBookie website. All sorts of links to Gamblers Anonymous and other support programs like that. Only wager what you're willing to lose. Best of luck with any of your online bets, but make sure you use that promo code DINESPORTS. Now, let's get to our friend Brennan Detzler from the Future Sickos podcast. Joining us today on the podcast, we've got Brennan Detzler from the Future Sickos podcast. Brennan, how are you doing tonight, sir?
I'm doing pretty well. It's a nice warm evening here in Southern Ontario, and I'm gearing up for the draft. It's less than 10 days away now, so we're in the single digits, so getting pretty excited.
Yeah, no kidding. It's a crazy time of year, especially for you guys there with your Sens podcast. It seems to be like news is either breaking every other minute, or we feel like, okay, is today going to be the Tkachuk extension announcement, or what kind of curveball is Melnyk throwing us now? So I'm sure you guys are just in the thick of it right now, eh?
Yeah, I don't know that there's ever a dull moment with the Sens. Like, I think even when we were going through our hardships a few years ago, it still seems like there was a lot to talk about. It may not have been as positive as it is now, but yeah, I think like right now there's definitely a lot going on. The McGuire hire was a pretty huge one recently. And then, yeah, like with all the extension talk and everything, I think it's a lot of kind of hoping and also a lot of speculation of just, hey, they might take this guy, they might take this guy, or they might trade for this guy. And none of that kind of comes into light, but it's, yeah, never a dull moment.
Yeah, no kidding. And I mean, like on that subject, like I find right now too, and it's a running joke on Senator's Twitter of seems to be like more Sens podcasts than actual, you know, Sens fans out there. And okay, yeah, that's not true. But it does seem to be like we're almost in a bit of a golden age of like hockey coverage in Ottawa. Because I mean, obviously we've got you guys out there. We've got like the Locked On Sens guys. We've got everyone that is on our network, the Wally and Mathot show. Like it just seems like there's just not only numbers wise, but just like really good quality content out there that this isn't two guys cracking a pint there and just, you know, throwing their ideas into the universe. Like these are people who are deeply devoted to this franchise and are discussing things that, you know, rewind 10 years, Joe Schmo didn't have access, like you guys are having access to some of these insiders and people connected to the team and all that. Like, do you guys find yourself just amazed at the amount of content that this franchise that everyone always jokes about, you know, there's not a ton of fans, oh, you didn't sell out the playoffs, blah, blah, blah. Like, how much is being put out there and the passion that we're seeing in recent years?
Yeah, definitely. Well, first of all, I want to say thank you for saying that what we come up with is of quality, because I don't know that I feel that way all the time. So thank you for that. But no, I completely agree. Like, I think, honestly, like I wasn't very active on Twitter until about a year ago is when I started kind of writing for an Ottawa Senators blog, just because I was actually like, you know what, some of these pieces I'm reading, I think I could write a little better then. So I kind of started writing, and then I kind of dug into it. And that's kind of when I linked up with Derek and Derek and I just kind of had like that natural chemistry that we were able to run with. But, you know, like just to speak to all of the different shows out there, because there is so much great content and there really is no shortage of content. You could probably spend every hour of your day listening to a different Ottawa Senators podcast. And I think that it really speaks to a need that the franchise had, if I'm being completely mm-hmm. honest. I think that there was really a need for that kind of coverage. And I think that people wanted it. And I think that just the demand and the way that people are responding to it is really kind of, it's encouraging. And it's encouraging that a lot of people can kind of create their own thing and have their own little loop and interactions based on their viewpoints and people that see things similarly, or maybe people that see things differently and want to have an argument with them. So it's really awesome to see it. I know that we have a really great relationship with, well, I mean, all the different Sens podcasts or networks that we've come into contact with. So it's not really like some competitive, let's eat each other kind of thing. It's like, hey, we're just some guys that are doing this for fun when we're done our full-time jobs. And we just want to have some fun with it. So it's been really, really great. And it's been awesome. Like the support's been great, but yeah, just the amount of content out there is really incredible.
Yeah, and I mean, speaking of incredible, you guys had a pretty incredible guest on just this week on your podcast there, Senators GM Pierre Dorion. And I mean, Pierre Dorion will do the typical media scrums and all that he has to as part of his GMing duties, but he doesn't give a lot of exclusive interviews to even, you know, TSN or Sportsnet, let alone, you know, Sens podcast. So how did that even come about that you guys were able to secure that?
Yeah. So, you know, my podcast partner, Derek, he's unfortunately gone through some pretty difficult struggles as of late. And the highlight of that has been his daughter, Jada, who the Ottawa Senators community, and I mean, community as a whole, Ottawa community as a whole, really has really, really stepped up and backed and supported and kind of like kept them in their prayers. And a big part of that was that there was a number of people within the Ottawa Senators organization that reached out to Derek and just kind of stated, you know, like, we're here for you if there's anything we can do, which is truly incredible. And, you know, it kind of just came into fruition a little bit with Derek and Pierre talking to each other, and Pierre said, you know, like we'd be happy to do it. I think Derek really noticed that Pierre had this incredible personal side through these personal interactions. And I think that Dorion has that ability to really kind of put on that face and kind of shield certain questions and dodge things and maybe not necessarily give up much. And I think that through Derek talking to him, he kind of realized, like, you know what, like, this is a really good guy. And we really want to show that to the Ottawa Senators community. We want to try to be able to show that side to the community. And maybe like, if you like, just a side that not everyone gets to see, because I think at the end of the day, it's pretty quick to make opinions of people that we see in the media based on little clips and different things like that. So I think Derek, especially, and then myself as well, kind of saw it as an opportunity to show Pierre's personal side. And I mean, he did just that. So.
Yeah, and I'm curious from your perspective as well too, right? Like, how did you feel like the interview went in terms of, like, did you feel like he was guarded and kept things sort of close to the vest, sort of just gave that typical hockey speak of, you know, pucks in, deep team effort, or did you feel like a little bit of his personality eked through and you got a little bit of a peek behind the curtain of what it's really like in, you know, day in the life of Pierre Dorion, or what it's like working in that Senators franchise there?
Yeah, I think Derek and I can speak on both of our behalfs. We were both ecstatic with the amount that we got out of him and the amount that he was willing to show us and kind of open up to us. I know that we asked some probing questions that we kind of just expected to kind of get shunned away just because they're the questions that we knew we wanted answers to, or they're the questions that we were interested in. And he actually gave us a lot back. And in certain cases, he kind of dug in and said, you know, this is the reasoning for us. One of those examples was he went into depth on Erik Brännström. And I know that it's kind of been like a concern or a hot topic within the Ottawa Senators organization of who's going to play on that right side moving forward. And Erik Brännström has that experience. He's done that in the SHL and he's done that coming up. So that was one of the questions that Derek had targeted at him. And Pierre, instead of kind of just saying, you know, he's not the right fit for it, he actually went in and gave his reasoning for it. He said, you know, like, we've tried Erik there, and we could go through different points of clip and I could show like why it wasn't effective and why DJ found that it wasn't effective. And, you know, like, I have to agree with my coach on this one. And he really kind of gave that reasoning. And I think that that was really powerful for a lot of different reasons, because we see a lot of decisions, and I think we're really quick to kind of be like, oh, why are they doing this? They're doing this for this reason, and like speculate, or when you don't know the full story, right? Like, it's really easy to almost gossip in a way. And for him to be able to kind of give that kind of clarity and like that inside look, not only was it cool to kind of see him do that and open up, but it was also really awesome in terms of understanding decisions that have happened in the last year or even the last few years.
Right. Well, it's interesting too, because, you know, for those who haven't done many interviews or aren't used to sort of being, you know, recorded or in front of a microphone or anything like that, it's easy for them to say, oh, you should have asked him this or whatever. And it's like, okay, yeah, that sounds great. But if I had actually asked him that point blank, he would have, you know, hung up the phone on me or like blackballed us from ever talking to any senators ever again. So it's very easy for people to sort of pick holes of, oh, you guys sort of toss some softball questions or whatever. But, you know, in an alternate reality, where there's a gun to his head and he has to 100% truthfully answer one question and he can't dodge it in any way, like, what would have been one question you would have loved to have just gotten an answer to truthfully from him on that interview?
So I had a question written that we didn't ask, A, because we didn't run out of time, and also because I kind of chickened out. And the question that I had was, I was really interested to see what it was like personally to have to trade franchise guys away from the Ottawa Senators. So the way that I kind of had the question framed was, I was curious as to, I basically said, I was like, I wrote down, at least I didn't say it, but I wrote down, I was like, you know, as fans, we have serious attachments to these players. We watch these players night in and night out, and Erik Karlsson, Mark Stone, I mean, various guys that people really feel attached to. And we watch these guys and we have these relationships, but really from a general manager's perspective, their relationship is going to be so much closer than those guys. They have a working relationship. They drafted them. They watched them develop. They were such an integral part of the kind of players that they became and kind of gave them that shot. And I was really curious what it was like from a personal perspective to have to part ways with a guy like Mark Stone or part ways with a guy like Erik Karlsson, who was really, he had that personal attachment to, because I can't imagine him not having a personal attachment to, if it wasn't either of those two guys, some of the other guys within the franchise. And, you know, like I do wonder what his answer would have been, but in a way, maybe it's a good thing we didn't get to that question. but no, I mean, that is one thing I'm very curious of, and I would love to hear. And I think it would be hard, and I would be really interested to hear his feedback on it.
Yeah, well, I mean, you got to save some questions for the follow-up interview there. Part two, Pierre Dorion coming on, maybe, you know, a couple months from now, you can pop the question then to him, see what he has to say there. But, you know, obviously big news in Sens lands this week. You already mentioned it off the top. There's going to be a second Pierre now in the front office there with the hiring of Pierre McGuire. And there's not too many people who are sort of Switzerland on this. Everyone seemed to have an opinion, and whether it was, hey, great hire, extra set of eyes, you know, sharp hockey mind, bring him in, can't hurt, to this is a joke, what are we doing, you know? So it was two very opposite ends of the spectrum there. I'm curious to know, though, like, where did you fall initially when you first heard it, and now that you've had time to maybe marinate on it for a couple of days, has your opinion changed at all?
My opinion has slightly changed. I think that Ian Mendez said something that it kind of aligned with my feelings on it. And it was that this isn't like, we can't judge this as a good hire and we can't judge this as a bad hire until a year or 2 years goes on and there's actually decisions that are made. Because I mean, like, I guess he was a part of like the coaching staff in 1995. I don't know what he's done for any other teams in the meantime. I mean, I know the way that he's like handled himself in the media, and I do agree with a lot of things that Pierre McGuire said in the media, but I also disagree with a lot of things that Pierre McGuire said in the media. So it's a really tough thing, because I think it's for myself, like I don't want to say I was indifferent. I think at the news of it, I was kind of just laughing, because I was like, oh great, this is another thing my friends can make fun of me for and send all these memes out my way of Pierre checking to see how someone's breath is or something like that. But I honestly think that I trust Dorion's mindset. I've had concerns about how Pierre McGuire incorporates stats or what he believes in stats. And I would imagine that that's a conversation that's had, because I know that DJ Smith is a very analytical guy, and he believes very highly in analytics, and he puts like a big weight on that. So I would imagine that there's been quite a bit of conversations that have gone on that front. But I mean, honestly, like I'm a huge fan of Jake Sanderson. I was a huge fan of him going into the draft, and Pierre McGuire was one of the guys who was like absolutely boosting his tires going into the draft, and he was completely right about him. He kind of has that scheme of like seven different players that he thinks that an organization needs, where it's those two elite centers, a power forward, a specialist forward, shutdown D, offensive D, and an elite goaltender. And I completely agree with that. I think that if you look at the Chicago Blackhawks, when they did the majority, like their big three cup runs, they had that, they kind of had that set up. So I mean, honestly, like there's bits and pieces, but I'm kind of trying to reserve my judgment for a year from now. Hopefully we can get some entertaining press conferences in the meantime though.
Oh yeah. I'm sure there's no shortage of memes and GIFs and all sorts of things that are going to start resurfacing from the decades of Pierre McGuire on air, and whether it's him with the, I think it's like a frozen popsicle or something like that. And yeah, you know, him photoshopped into the stepbrothers pose there with Sidney Crosby. So I'm sure all of those things will be popping up on good old Sen's Twitter nonstop. But I'm kind of the same mindset as you, where right now I don't know how much it moves the needle. You know, it's sort of a made up title, you know, VP of hockey operations or whatever it is there. Like, well, okay, if he's the vice president, who's the president of that department? Like, is it Melnick? Like, it's a little bit confusing on that front, how much input he's going to have. You know, I like hearing that he's not just going to Skype this in from Connecticut. Like, he's actually moving to Ottawa. He's investing in it and all of that. But all of that also sets up kind of the subplot this year of, okay, you've got DJ and you've got Dorian, whose contracts are coming up. They just blocked Capuano from interviewing with Buffalo. They've brought McGuire in now too. Like, reading the tea leaves, are you getting the sense that for all the talk of unparalleled success, the five-year window, this plan, that plan, all that, like, are you getting the sense that this is a do or die year for Dorian and DJ? And if this isn't a playoff team, it might be the, you know, Capuano and McGuire show come start of next season. Like, what are you inferring from any of that there?
I'm trying to be as blindly optimistic as I possibly can, because I personally do not want that to be the situation. I honestly, and aside from him coming on the show, like, I have nothing but respect for Pierre Dorian. I think that he's been put into some very, very difficult situations. And I think that more times than not, he's come out on top. And maybe we got a bit of luck with that Tim Stutzel pick. But regardless, like, I really do believe in kind of the vision that he's had. And as someone who like is mostly interested in prospects regarding hockey, I've really respected and I think that he's done an incredible job rebuilding the team. And DJ seems like the kind of guy that everyone loves. And I mean, like, everyone, players, media, and everything. But I do think that there's some external pressure. I think it would be hard to ignore that. I mean, if I'm being completely honest, that was probably my first thought with the Pierre McGuire hire, was I was like, it doesn't, like, what's going on here kind of thing. But I think that this team is trending in the right direction. And I think that the progress that they showed at the end of last season, I mean, if we would have done better to start off the year, we would have been a playoff team. Mm-hmm. We could have gone to the cup final instead of Montreal. So I think that it's like, it's one of those things where, like, I really think that the team's trending in the right direction. And I think that they're going to be competitive next year. I don't know if they're going to make the playoffs. Like, I think that we're in an incredibly tough division, and I don't know if the team's ready yet, but I would hope that if the team continues to progress and we continue to show that vision and they continue to look like a legitimate contender, Dorian and DJ Smith are here to see this thing through, because they've put up with the hard part of it. And it's about to come down to the part where all their hard work pays off. And I think that they deserve that. And that's who I want to see. If we end up having that cup parade, I want to see Dorian and DJ there.
Yeah, no, they've certainly put in the time and effort through the lean years there. So who knows, you know, crazier things have happened under Uncle Eugene's reign there. So time will tell. But I mean, with that news out of the way, obviously the next big nugget that all Sens fans are waiting to drop here is the Brady Tkachuk extension, Drake Batherson extension, right? We've got some key players that I have no doubt they're going to get signed. What that term, what that value is going to be, I mean, that's obviously up in the air. But assuming they both get signed, who do you think gets announced first? Like, is it, or do you think they're waiting to sign both of them and it's a dual announcement and they sort of move forward there? Do you think they're putting more emphasis on getting Drake signed because it's probably going to be lesser term, lesser value? Or do you think it's going to be a Brady or nothing type thing?
That's a really good question. And it's a hard one because you do have to figure that that is something that goes into considerations. I think that they're working on both of them simultaneously. And I think that they're also talking to Victor Mete. I think Victor Mete might end up going to arbitration or a little closer to arbitration. Just it might work out better for both teams. Just kind of, okay, like what makes the most sense here. But I think that announcing a Drake Batherson extension makes the most sense first. And I think that your point of, because it's likely going to be less money, but I also think that it would kind of be good to get that one out of the way and then focus on Brady. I'm worried to see what happens with Brady. I mean, like, I'm definitely like, I want to see him locked up long-term, but I can also kind of see both sides, and I can see if he wants to sign a bridge deal, why that could also be a good thing for Ottawa, because if we extend him for another 8 years after that, then that means he's going to be a Senator for an even longer time. But I think personally that the Batherson deal is just going to be easier to get done. So I think that that one will come up first, and I'm really hoping that it's a long-term contract and maybe a slight overpay for the first 2 years, but maybe a slight underpay for the last 2 years, which is just going to extend our window.
Yeah. Are you team Brady or team Shabbat for team captain?
Oh, I'm team Brady all the way.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I really like Shabbat. I think that he's an incredible player, but I just think Brady has all that heart that a captain has. And I mean, I'm sure they would both do a great job, but yeah, I'm all team Brady. And I mean, I hope, like, if it comes down to him needing to sign a long-term extension for him to get that C, like, I mean, I hope he does, but regardless, like, I think he's the captain no matter what. Even if there isn't a letter on his chest, I think he's the captain. So I think he's the captain this year.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think a lot of fans would agree with that there. So, like, how much stock do you put into the rumors that Melnick is kind of dangling that C in front of Brady as far as, okay, if you don't sign the long-term extension there, maybe it does go to Shabbat. Like, or do you think that no matter what, whether it's a 3-year deal and then they extend him for 8 afterwards or whatever, that he's going to be having a C on his chest come puck drop in the fall here?
It's hard. Like, I think that it's definitely an incentive, and I think that they're using it as leverage. And I mean, I can't say that it's a stupid move. Like, I think even last year I was kind of saying, like, maybe that's something that gets presented at him when he's signing his extension of, hey, you can be the captain of this team, but, you know, like, leaders might take a bit of a discount. Like, and maybe it's something that does work out that way. But you know what? Like, I think, and I hope that he gets that C even if he signs a bridge deal. And I think that if he signs a bridge deal, like, maybe they at least do something that's like 4 or 5 years to kind of warrant that. I mean, like, for, in my opinion, I think that a 5-year deal would be a terrible decision. I think that a 3-year deal, which I believe you would still be an RFA when it would come up, and then kind of lock him in for the main chunk of his prime, I think that that would be the most optimal. But, you know, like, I think Brady wants to be here. He's made it pretty clear. He's got his best friend as a line mate. He's got another best friend that speaks German living next to him. They're living like, I don't know, they're like making bunk beds and having Nerf gun fights all the time. So I think that he's happy here. I think he wants to be here. And I think that if he signs a bridge deal, it's not going to be because he doesn't want to be here. It's just going to be because it's what makes the most sense, hopefully, for him to stay here even longer. So I think that C is going to get slapped on his chest come September, October, regardless.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Could you imagine if there was no pandemic and, you know, you still had Craig Medaglia running that social media team and all that, the content that would have been coming out of that Tkachuk Norris household there this year? Like, it would have been like Jersey Shore every week. Like, it would have been wild, the stuff that would have been coming out of that house. So we can dream, Sens fans. Maybe one day we'll find like unearthed footage of what was going on with those three in lockdown, but would have been entertaining to say the least. Now, we already hit on one of the sort of hot topic items there on Sens Twitter. We're going to go to our second one here, and that seems to be people again taking up the camp of, if he's there at 10, you take Wallstedt, the goaltender, versus, no, we don't need a goalie, we've got enough prospects coming down the pipeline, you take the best skater available there. Where do you fall on that? Because it's a huge if to even begin with, if he is going to be there.
Yeah.
with the team selecting ahead of him. But let's say the stars align. He's there at 10. What would you like to see the Senators do?
Oh, I would jump out of my seat. I might like run out of my house and run down my street if they selected Jesper Wallstedt. I would be so excited. I'm a massive Wallstedt truther. I think that this guy is the real deal. And I mean, this is from me looking at YouTube footage at 2 a.m. So who knows like what I know about goalies, but I mean, like, I really do believe that he is that guy. Like, I really do believe that he is that elite goalie. And I think he has that potential to be a top three, a top five goalie in the NHL. And I think to have an opportunity to get a guy like that on your team at 10, it's just a no-brainer for me. Like, if he's there, I feel like they have to take him. And I understand that there's a lot of promising goalies in the pipeline. Like, Matt Sogard looks like he's going to be the real deal. Philip Gustafson looked super poised this year. Even Joey Dak, if we're able to hold on to him. And like, there's no lack of talent. I don't think that we're going to be in trouble if we don't get him. But if he's there, like, I think that it just upgrades that position to a level that not a lot of teams have, to be able to have like that elite goalie. I think that we saw it with Vasilevsky and Price, I mean, to say the least. I know that's kind of been the comparison, but it's also, it's not anything new. Like, a lot of people go back to that, you know, like, there's a lot of teams that win a Stanley Cup with an average goalie. And that might be true, that like historically, but you look at Jordan Binnington when St. Louis won their cup, and he was hands down the best goalie in the league. That's why they won the cup. He came in and he took a team that was in last place to the playoffs, and then they ended up winning a cup. And then you look at, I mean, like, all of these guys that have gotten hot at the right times. And if you have a goalie like that, that just means that he's probably going to get hot that much more often or that much more consistently. So for me, it's a no-brainer. If he's there, I mean, I'm even open to them trading up for him. Like, I love this guy. I think he's the real deal. I'm all Jesper Wallstedt. But in all honesty, I don't think he's going to be there.
Yeah, no, you and I are in the exact same boat. I have no problem with them packaging either, whether it's picks or some sort of prospect or something like that. Obviously not one of the blue chip ones there, but, you know, some sort of pipeline prospect and moving up and getting him if they can make it happen. I was hoping that last year they were going to work some sort of magic and, you know, package the extra late round first and a whole bunch of picks and move up ahead to get Askarov. That obviously didn't happen there. But that to me seems to be the one ingredient that is missing. And I've written about it on Steve Warren's website there, SensNation.com, all the time about how you need an elite goaltender if you're going to win the cup. Like, if you just want to make the playoffs, sure, the stack of good goaltenders and good enough to get there, you can ride with that. If you want to legitimately have a five-year window to compete there and not just a fluke, hey, look how deep we went here, you know, like the Sens have had a few of those of, oh, look how deep we went, and then we didn't even make the playoffs the next year, right? Like, it starts with goaltending. It starts from that back end. And I agree. I think Wallstedt's the real deal. I think he is very comparable to the Vasilevskis and, you know, the Binningtons and some of the comparables that we've seen in sort of those scouting rankings. And if he's available there, or even if they need to move up 2-3 picks, whatever it is, the one I'm most worried about is Detroit. I just think Stevie Y, you know, he was there for the Vasilevsky days, so he knows the trouble that they have with, what is it, Howard and, you know, Jonathan Bernier. They were marching out not that long ago, so God knows they need a goaltender out there. But I'm of the opinion, if you can get your hands on him, I don't care what skater outside of maybe Owen Power somehow falling to number 10, you're going to try and make a move for him, right?
Yeah, no, and I completely agree. I do think that Stevie Y is going to take him at 6. Like, I can't see a world where he doesn't. And if he doesn't, I would have a hard time believing that San Jose is going to pass on him. So that's why I would honestly even be really open or would be excited if Ottawa even maybe packaged up those 2 seconds to move up a little bit. I don't know. But I do think that is the kind of guy that we need to really put us over the top. And, you know, there is another goalie in this year's draft in Sebastian Kosa, who is probably also going to be a first round guy. And he looks legit, massive guy. He had incredible, like, unbelievable stats. Like one of those things where you almost have to wonder if it's a fluke because he just completely dominated the WHL. And there's been some talk that maybe he's that option for Ottawa. Maybe if they end up trading down later in the first round, or maybe they even have a look at him at 10, if they believe that he's that guy. So I do agree though. I do think that that is a big piece that Ottawa should really be targeting. And you know, like even to speak to what you were saying, when we did go on those deep cup runs, Craig Anderson was a different goalie in the playoffs. He turned it on and he was unbeatable. And to have a guy like that, I mean, like we were fortunate because he was a playoff goalie. But we don't know that that's going to be the case with any guy that comes in. So yeah, I completely agree. I think it's the biggest, not the biggest position of need, but if they have the chance to put a star in there, that's the place that they need a star the most.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, our good friend Eugene Melnick has done his annual Toronto sports media tour there and has made it known to the world that they are looking for obviously number one center, top four defenseman. Whether they acquire it via free agent signing, I'm not super optimistic on people maybe wanting to come unless they're really bullish on the amount of money Eugene's going to crack open and pay them. But historically, that hasn't been great, so I don't see that happening. But possibly via trade, like some of the names that are on the block, we've heard everything from they're taking a run at Getzlaff to Matthew Tkachuk to Jack Eichel, Claude Giroux. Obviously, some of those run from wildly optimistic to somewhat realistic there, but of the names you've heard, whether it is free agent or trade targets, like who do you think the Senators are looking at in terms of centermen and top four defensemen that we could be seeing in a 2D logo this fall?
It's hard. I'm not thrilled with a lot of the options either because I know that the price is going to be far too high, or I just don't believe that they're a top center. Mm-hmm. I think is been the big thing for me. I think that one of the trades that was suggested that I was kind of interested in is that I saw that someone suggested that since Tampa Bay is going to be facing some difficulty with the expansion draft, obviously they can get around the cup, but they can't get around the expansion draft. So
there's only so many rules that can break in one calendar year there.
Exactly. So I think with Tampa Bay running into some difficulty, I think that there's some pretty awesome defensemen that they could maybe get on the cheap and be able to bring in and protect. Because really, like if they're protecting Shabbat and Mete, and I mean, like as of right now, it's probably Zaitsev as well. But if they have those two guys and they're able to trade for a young guy, like maybe a Cal Foote or an Eric Cernak, if they make him available, I think that those would be incredible options. I mean, I would imagine that Tampa is going to want to hold on to Hedman, Sergachev, and McDonough given these playoffs. And, you know, if McDonough is one of the guys that becomes available, well, I think then that's a pretty awesome option for them as well. So I think that in terms of maybe there hasn't been as many rumors about that, but I could see that being a good fit. I really like Cal Foote. He's a big, big defenseman. He's looked solid. He's young as well. So I feel like he would fit in really well into the core. And I think that he might be the kind of guy that could really grow with Ottawa. Another name that I've seen for defense though, that I liked was Josh Manson. And I think that he could really be that kind of shut down hard hitting guy that they need. There's a lot of talk about maybe Adam Henrique being included in that deal. And I don't know how much I love that, but it does kind of seem like the kind of deal that Ottawa would make. So I think that could be a good fit. And then the other guy, so the last guy that I'm really big on that I think could play a first line center role, even though historically he's played a lot of right wing, is Sam Reinhart in Buffalo. And I don't know how eager Buffalo is to part with Sam Reinhart, but he's a guy who has consistently put up 60 points. He seems to just be getting better offensively. He's a big player, but he also is just extremely smart. And I watched a lot of Buffalo games. I don't live too far from Buffalo, so I've kind of kept a bit of an eye on them. And I feel like there's some untapped potential there. And I think that getting 70 points kind of isn't impossible for him. And I think that he would fit in really well with that center and right wing ability. But I also think he would fit in really well because I don't think he would be signed to a ridiculous contract. I think if we bring in a guy like a Jack Eichel, it's just unrealistic with the amount of money that he's making. Like we need money available for when our young core comes up and we need to spend to the cap. And I think that bringing in a guy like Sam Reinhart, who we might be able to get for like 5 to 6 million, I think that that would be a great option for them.
Yeah, no, who knows what's going on with that dumpster fire in Buffalo there. I mean, I think everything is going to hinge on what happens with Eichel and what do you get in return for him? Or do you somehow, you know, sell him on a retool on the fly? But I think his time in Buffalo is done, if I had to venture a guess. But who knows? Crazier things have happened once again. So we'll maybe leave you with this one last question before we let you go there. So obviously, it's been announced, division's going back to normal, full 82-game schedule, all of that. So life is back to status quo in the NHL. As they're constructed right now, without a splashy free agent signing or trade or anything like that, is Ottawa a playoff team next year?
I think we're a fringe playoff team. I think that anything can happen in a span of teams getting hot and teams getting cold. And I think that if Ottawa gets hot at the right times, gets the right bounces, they can be a wild card team. I think that if there's times that they get a bit cold, deal with injuries, don't get those bounces, then we're just going to miss. But I think that we'll finish outside of the bottom 10 next year, which I think will be a massive improvement. And I'm optimistic, but I also realize that there's regression. Mm-hmm. And I do know that the way that we were playing at the end of the year, it kind of felt like we were a bit invincible, like we were a last place invincible team. I know that no one's invincible. So it's going to be really interesting to see how they ride the highs and the lows. But I think that if they get the bounces and if they get hot against the right teams, they can make the playoffs.
Amazing. Brendan, thank you so much for joining us tonight. For those that are listening that want to tune into your podcast or see any of your articles or anything like that, where are the best places for people to check you out?
Yeah, so we're extremely active on Twitter, at Future Sickos. However, our podcasts are live on all major streaming platforms. So whether it be Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, type in the Future Sickos podcast, you'll hear that really ugly, brutal song as our intro that hurts everyone's ears. And from there, you'll hear our ugly voices. So be sure to check us out if you're interested.
Well, looking forward to hopefully maybe even seeing you at the CTC for one of the games coming up this year. But regardless, just going to be nice to be getting back to a little bit of normal. And hopefully the Senators follow through on good old Melnick's unparalleled success years coming up this fall.
Definitely. Thank you so much for having me on.
And that's a wrap for another episode of the Dine Sports Podcast on the Dine Sports Podcast Network. As always, a huge thank you goes out to Brendan for sitting down with us and talking all things Ottawa Senators, which is going to be a very interesting team to watch this offseason leading up to the expansion draft, who they're going to protect, who they're going to expose. All sorts of free agents are being linked to Ottawa right now, trade targets. They've certainly got the salary cap space to make that happen. Whether that comes to reality or not is another matter entirely, but certainly not short on storylines in Ottawa these days when it comes to their beloved Ottawa Senators. As always, if you like what you heard, make sure you like, comment, share, subscribe. Got various social media channels. Toss us a follow on any of those as well, too. All of them, the handles are the same, at Dine Sports. Whatever your favorite social media platform is, we're on there under that handle. So give us a little follow. Check out our YouTube page as well, too. We got all sorts of behind-the-scenes content, exclusive interviews, and stuff going up there all the time. So make sure to toss a subscription that way, too. Until next time, folks. Enjoy your weekend. We'll see you next week. Stay safe, everyone. We'll see you in a little bit.